Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you know me, and I think you do, you know that I'm not a big football fan, but there's a football story, football-related story, that has made sizable news this week. Some TV hosts have even celebrated the fact that it has taken precious mind space away from the felon president. It concerns former head coach of the New England Patriots, now new head coach at the University of North Carolina. It's not about his football experience. It's about his life experience, specifically his new romance, apparently, with a woman who is roughly, I haven't counted the years lately, 50 years his junior. And much talk about what, and not only 50 years his junior, but also credited with being part of his football program now, and actually attending practice and giving notes to players, not those kind of notes, you know, corrective notes. And so there's a lot of speculation about what this is. And I have only four words to say to everybody about this subject. Read up on Groucho. Yes. Hello, welcome to the show. Santa Monica, California, the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, as is becoming more frequent these days on this program, news of the convicted felon's best friend.
Looks like what's close.
Europeans, you remember them. They used to be more like us. They're fleeing X, not the letter, the platform, en masse, according to a new report from Elon Musk's social media platform itself. The latest figures from X published this week, and according to Politico, the company was required to release those figures to comply with the European Union's flagship tech Rulebook, the Digital Services Act, these figures show a sharp decline in the number of users in Europe. Since August of last year, the platform has lost 11 million European users, the biggest exoduses, is that the plural of exodus, reported in France, Poland, and Germany. Why weren't they? Well, yes, they were. Today, the platform has about 95 million users in Europe, down from about 105 last year. That's a 10% drop in 6 months. Elon can do math, can't he? Lithuania and Luxembourg both lost a quarter of their users. So don't sell stuff in countries beginning with the letter L. Musk acquired X, as you know, a few years ago, changed the platform's rules, encouraged right-wing political movements from the United States to Europe. That has sparked criticism about the website's amplification of disinformation and hate speech. Like, that's a bad thing. The city of Paris, quit the platform in January, joining a slew of other accounts that have fled, from legendary horror writer Stephen King to the British newspaper The Guardian. The European Commission has been investigating whether X adheres to the EU's requirements to act on illegal content and fake news ever since, way back in 2023, and it accused the platform of breaking the rules and the law, just the law, last July. It is yet to hand down a long-awaited punishment. Tesla, of course, his electric vehicle company, has also taken a hit in Europe in recent months, sales falling by more than 50% across January and February this year. That's the worst month to buy electric cars, apparently. The brand sales in Germany fell by nearly 60% in the aforementioned January compared to the same period last year. French registrations were down by 63%.
The French
beat the Germans in not buying Teslas. You got to take what you can get. The Trump-blessed Doge unit, you've heard of him, could help its boss, a certain Elon Musk, avoid more than $2.37 billion in potential legal liabilities by stripping power from the regulators who are tasked with supervising some of the billionaires' businesses. This is news for those who think he's doing this out of the goodness of his heart. He doesn't have to do this. That's from the Register, the British Tech Journal. Quoting a new Senate report, Musk maintained full control over his sprawling empire, your SpaceX, your Tesla, your Neuralink, your XAI, and the Boring Company. Hey, where's my tunnel? Even after the president tasked him to lead the cost-trimming, data-scouring Doge effort. As head of that unit, Musk, as you know, has exercised sweeping influence over the very agencies tasked with regulating his businesses. The report notes Musk has done nothing, that's zero, to separate himself from his companies since taking that position as a special U.S. government employee. It refers, does the report, to his decisions in his role heading up Doge as being marked by, quote, self-enrichment and avoiding what he perceives as obstacles to advancing his own interests, unquote. This is a report, I think, from Democratic senators, quoting here, fearing that Musk's conflicts of interest could be unrivaled by the worst insider trading, unquote. And it argues it sets a dangerous precedent that undermines government integrity. You've heard of that. They allege that, pointing to the Department of Justice's sudden unexplained dismissal of a discrimination suit against SpaceX and the resignation of the head of the FAA, reportedly after pressure from you-know-who. That $2.37 billion figure comes from Democratic staff on the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, a group which doesn't have a long enough title. They tallied potential financial liabilities tied to 40 to 65 active or potential enforcement actions involving Musk's companies across 11 different federal agencies. Well, they don't exist. Those matters include Neuralink's liability for alleged violation of the Animal Welfare Act surrounding its treatment of monkeys and pigs. Tesla's potentially false or misleading statements regarding the capability of autopilot, which we've talked about before, SpaceX's alleged failure to comply with FAA launch requirements, and more. Like, hey, boring company, where's my tunnel? The remaining 25 investigations, which include allegations of unlawful retaliation and interference with union organizing at SpaceX and Tesla, as well as multiple National Highway Traffic Safety Administration probes into Tesla's self-driving technology, couldn't be quantified, according to the report. Musk and his companies could gain millions or billions, not quite trillions, more simply by avoiding the time, legal fees, and risk of being ordered to undertake remediation efforts or change labor practices. Sounds like Musk love. And now.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Microplastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said.
Get a honeybee near a rose or a lavender. The insect will extend its straw-like tongue to search for nectar, thus pollinating the flower in the process. It's according to the Washington Post. They, I guess, have watched honeybees do that. Or at least they've heard about it. That's how it works in clean environments. But experiments show that when bees are exposed to microplastic pollution, their memory gets so muddled, they may forget the scents associated with sugary rewards. You know that feeling? As a result, pollination may fail. That, of course, is bad news for flowers and crops. And people who eat them, not the flowers, the crops. While honeybees, the most important pollinator of crops, seem particularly affected, other pollinators such as your bumblebees suffer too. Such insects visit flowers, I think on a 30-day pass, to forage for nectar and pollen as food for themselves and their young, and then transfer the pollen from male parts of one flower to the female parts of another, fertilizing it in the process. Kids, don't listen to that part. How do microplastics in our environment particularly and potentially harm pollination? Recent studies have shown the tiny pieces of plastics, which may originate from everyday products, your food packaging, your disposable cutlery, or your plastic toys, can make bees more susceptible to bacteria and viruses. When a plastic water bottle, for example, ends up in a ditch or a river, it disintegrates with the help of the sun, water, and wind into ever smaller pieces, which float in the air, seep into soils, settle on vegetation. Other microplastics are made minuscule from the start, such as glitter or microbeads in body scrubs. They may get washed off from our skin into wastewater, which is then used for the irrigation of crops. Once such microplastics are ingested or inhaled by bees, yes, bees inhale. Tell your friends. They can damage, the microplastic can, the bees' guts and get into their brains, impacting memory and learning, research has shown. They can outright kill them, too. In addition, your flowers may get literally clogged up with microplastics. So it's good for everything. Quote, if plastic is adding to all the stressors that pollinators are already facing, I think we really might be in a tricky position, says Thomas Cherico Wenger Guerrero. Four names, sure. An agroecologist at Agroscope, that's Switzerland's Federal Research Center for Agriculture. According to the EPA, before it dies or is killed, pesticides, habitat changes, and new emerging diseases have all been suggested as causes of colony collapse in which bees disappear and hives die off. Only to make way for new... And those tiny pieces of plastic are infiltrating the large arteries in the neck. We're now talking about humans. They carry blood from the heart to the head, with the highest amounts found in fatty buildup He was great in The Silent. In the Arteries of Stroke Survivors, a small new study from the American Heart Association suggests the concentration of so-called micro-nanoplastics in carotid arteries was 51 times higher in plaque from people who'd had a stroke, mini-stroke, aren't those cute, or temporary blindness compared to amounts found in the walls of plaque-free carotid arteries. Even people with carotid artery plaque who had not experienced any of those conditions still had 16 times more microplastics, micro-nanoplastics, in their plaque, putting the plaque in plastics, taking the plaque out of... Well, it's not just the diseased arteries have more plastics, said the study's lead researcher. That is clear, but those with diseased arteries causing symptoms have far more plastics. Unquote him. The results considered preliminary until full findings are published in a peer-reviewed journal were presented the end of April at the Heart Association's Vascular Discovery Scientific Sessions Conference in Baltimore. There's an event with five names. Microplastics and nanoplastics mainly result from larger plastic consumer products, as you know. We've discussed this before, and here we are discussing it again. Microplastics are omnipresent in the environment, as we've discussed, enter the human body when people inhale or ingest them. Previous studies have shown they're present in the lungs, liver, placenta, breast milk, urine, and blood. The new research comes on the heels of a study published in January in the journal Nature Medicine revealing microplastic presence in brain tissue. And the 2024 study in the New England Journal of Medicine that found people whose carotid artery plaque contained microplastics had a higher likelihood of having a stroke, heart attack, or dying within 3 years. Just one word: microplastics. And now let's take a break, a momentary break from the bad news, for some worse news. The side effects of the week.
Caplyta can cause serious side effects. Call your doctor about sudden mood changes, behaviors, or suicidal thoughts right away. Antidepressants may increase these risks in young adults. Elderly dementia patients have increased risk of death or stroke. Caplyta is not approved for dementia-related psychosis. Report fever, confusion, or stiff muscles which may be life-threatening, or uncontrolled muscle movements which may be permanent. Common side effects include sleepiness, dizziness, nausea, and dry mouth. These aren't all the side effects.
Oh, you mean... To know the rest of the side effects, you have to watch another commercial. Thanks.
The fox sits on the bridge. The crowd is waiting. Chains are locked across my chest. There's no heartbreaking. I've done this show a thousand times. This trick's so easy as they lower me into your waters. There's no escaping. There's a secret passage out of here, but I don't wanna reappear. I just wanna stay with you in here. In Houdini's box, close the lid and tie the knot. Houdini's box. Houdini's box. Houdini's box. Mm-hmm. take such good care of you. I brush your hair and tie your shoes. There's nothing in the world I wouldn't do. In Houdini's bar, in Houdini's box, seal the lid and tie the knot. In Houdini's box, Houdini's box, Houdini's box, Houdini's box, Houdini's box. The box sits on the bridge, crowd still waiting.
From Santa Monica, this is Le Show, and here's Ralph.
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better, hip hip hooray.
The words written by the chatbot, Claude. Instead of depressing wages or taking jobs, generative AI chatbots like Claude, ChatGPT, and Gemini have had almost no significant wage or labor impact so far. The finding that calls into question the huge money expenditures required to create and run AI models. This is from the British tech journal, The Register. In a working paper released earlier this month, two economists looked at the labor market impact of AI chatbots on 11 occupations covering 25,000 workers and 7,000 workplaces in Denmark in 2023 and 2024. Many of these occupations have been described as being vulnerable to AI. Your accountants, your customer support specialists, your financial advisors, your HR professionals, IT support specialists, journalists, legal professionals, marketing professionals, office clerks, software developers, and teachers. Whew. Yet, after one of the contributors to this study analyzed the data, he and his colleagues found the labor and wage impact of chatbots to be minimal. Quote, AI chatbots have had no significant impact on earnings or recorded hours in any occupation. That's what the authors state. The report should concern the tech industry. You think? It has hyped AI's economic potential while plowing billions, maybe trillions, into infrastructure meant to support it. Earlier this year, OpenAI admitted that it loses money per query, so ask it more, even on the most expensive enterprise units. While companies like Microsoft and Amazon are starting to pull back on their AI infrastructure spending in light of low business adoption the last few months, the problem isn't that workers are avoiding AI chatbots, quite the contrary, but they simply aren't yet equating to actual economic benefits. Meanwhile, Mark Zuckerberg and Meta are pitching a vision of AI chatbots as an extension of your friend network and a potential solution to the, quote, loneliness epidemic, unquote. Does that exist? Facebook's parent company this week debuted a new mobile app that transforms the Meta AI chatbot into a more social experience, including the ability to share AI-generated creations with friends and family. I thought they didn't have friends. Oh, we'll get to that. Zuckerberg sees the AI bot itself as your next friend. Quote, the average American has, I think, it's fewer than three friends, Zuckerberg said during a podcast this week. Quote, and the average person has demand for meaningfully more. Unquote. He should know the more time you spend chatting with an AI friend, the more of your personal information you're giving away, says the senior director of AI programs at Common Sense Media. Quote, it's about who owns and controls and can use your intimate thoughts and expressions after you share them, unquote. And under Meta's privacy policy, the AI chatbot can use what the company knows about you in its interactions. Meta can also use your conversations and any media you upload for further training of its models. You might want to sue for copyright infringement right there. You can choose to have Meta AI not remember specific details, but there is no way for U.S. users to opt out more broadly. Zuckerberg's bot friendship vision is arriving in a moment when AI companions face criticism and controversy, particularly as younger users encounter them. The Wall Street Journal reported last week that its testing showed earlier versions of Meta's chatbots, including those based on celebrity personas, are willing to engage in sexual banter, even with users who identified themselves as teens. Meta says it has since implemented controls to prevent this from happening. Why was it? And OpenAI, on a related matter, has hurriedly rolled back its latest ChatGPT model days after it was released because it was deemed to be too, quote, sycophanty and annoying, unquote. OpenAI boss Sam Altman confirmed the release of the update for GPT-4.0 on end of April, claiming it had improved both intelligence and personality. Unlike himself, it did not take long for users to start noticing issues, with one commenting, quote, it's been feeling very yes man like lately. Altman acknowledged that by saying, yeah, it glazes too much, unquote. Glaze is TikTok slang for showering a person with excessive praise. I think the new slang for that should be presidential cabinet. But back to ChatGPT, things began to go downhill rapidly. Another user urged, quote, undo it, please. The weird follow-up questions, the cringy attempt at being relatable, the sycophancy dialed up to 11, and the damn emoji are all unbearable, unquote. End of the month, last month, Altman said the company was working on fixes, agreed that the updates had made the chatbot's, quote, personality too sycophanty and annoying, unquote. Sycophants are celebrating their elevation to adjective status. Quote, as it turned out, the fix, as it turned out, the fix became a rollback of the update. Users shared screenshots of the chatbot appearing to applaud and cheer on some decidedly dubious statements, including one where a user's decision to stop their medication received a response beginning with, quote, I am so proud of you, unquote. The bot, the friendly bot, was likely an attempt by OpenAI to make the experience more engaging for users as it faces mounting competition from alternative chatbots. Judging by the feedback and hasty backing out of the update, it might have gone too far. A spokesperson for OpenAI pointed to the company's printed explanation for what happened. Quote, we focused too much on short-term feedback. The fix, quote, more guardrails and training refinements, unquote. Meaning we're not going to stop. Just ask Mark. Or to, quote, chatbot Claude, hip hip hooray. Now turning to news of the convicted felon president. You may have seen clips of, or if you've been really lucky, the whole thing, another supposed cabinet meeting, which was basically a public display of the cabinet members' unbridled praise of the president, during which he said, I think the two words that might go down in history as the most damning self-description of a policy which may be the most damaging to the American economy since the Indians. It was during a discussion by the president of his tariff policy, which so far seems to be resulting in shortages and higher prices. Well, that's what he promised during the... No, it's not. I'm checking myself here. And here's what he said in that context.
Somebody said, oh, the shelves are going to be open. Well, maybe the children will have two dolls instead of 30 dolls, you know? And maybe the two dolls will cost a couple of bucks more than they would normally.
When or if the tariffs get started, there'll still be a bit of pain. Some shelves just might be empty. Your budget might feel some strain. But that's when you must remember, it's always darkest before sunrise calls. Maybe it's just a different Christmas. You can still afford two dolls. Maybe you'll have to stand in line to get a new bar of soap. But I declare the day of liberation. That should give you some hope. You take your kids to the sports store when parental duty calls. You can't afford to buy them bats no more, but you can still afford two balls. This all works out when those countries come to the table. And even if prices don't come down, at least they'll be almost stable. But meantime, take your children anywhere but the malls. And when they ask for food or clothing, you can still afford two dolls.
And now, news of the godly. Hello, RTE in Ireland. You've probably already covered this story. Disgraced former Bishop Brendan Comiskey has died, aged 89. He previously served as the Bishop of Ferns in Ireland. Yes, there are ferns. Before resigning following the publication of the Ferns Report, which outlined a catalog of child sex abuse in the diocese over a period of just four decades, there were claims that he did not report allegations that Father Sean Fortune had abused a number of children while Comiskey was bishop, and that as a result, he failed to protect children in the diocese. The most painful place to be protected. The Monaghan native died in Louth County Hospital in Dundalk. Yes, I'm mispronouncing them. Comiskey was ordained a priest of the Congregation of the Sacred Hearts of Jesus and Mary way back in 1961. He became auxiliary bishop of the Archdiocese of Dublin in 1979 and was appointed the Bishop of Ferns. Not Art Fern, just Ferns, in April 1984. Ask your dad. In his resignation letter in 2003, Comiskey said he was never asked or forced to resign by the Catholic Church after the report came out. Colin O'Gorman, a survivor of clerical abuse in the diocese and a longtime campaigner for justice, said Comiskey's governance was, quote, appalling. Continuing the quote, Brendan Comiskey was not a good bishop, and he did not behave in a way that could be considered to be moral or appropriate or decent. Continuing the quote, but it would be wrong and it would be false to suggest that this was about some unique individual failing or level of incompetence. There was no incompetence involved. He did what he was mandated to by the church. unquote. Can't wait for that conclave. And now, news of this smart world.
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Google's oldest smart thermostats have an expiration date. This from Ars Technica. The company's announced that the first and second generation Nest learning thermostats will lose support this October, disabling most of its connected features. Google is offering some compensation for anyone still using these devices, but there's no Google upgrade for European users. Google is also discontinuing its only European model, and it's not planning to release another. Both affected North American thermostats predate Google's ownership of the company, Nest, which it acquired in 2014. Nest released the original learning thermostat to almost universal praise in 2011. The sequel arrived a year later. Google's second-generation Euro unit launched in 2014. Since launch, all these devices have been getting regular software updates and have migrated across multiple app redesigns. But now, as Google points out, these products have had a long life. 2011, ladies and gentlemen. And they're not being rendered totally inoperable. No. Come October, these devices will no longer receive software updates or connect to Google's cloud services. You won't be able to control them from the Google Home app or via Assistant. The devices, though, will still work as a regular dumb thermostat to control temperatures, and scheduling will remain accessible from the thermostat's screen. Google is going to be releasing via an email some deals to soften the blow. It's offering a discount on the fourth-generation learning thermostats for those who are still using the soon-to-be-unsupported models. Situation is a bit more frustrating for European users. Google doesn't have any newer units to sell. Heating and cooling systems in Europe have quirks that set them apart from North American systems, and consequently, it's been more than a decade since Nest released a smart thermostat adapted to, you know, Europe, and it never will again, says the company. This comes just weeks after Google confirmed it had discontinued the Nest Protect smoke and carbon monoxide alarm, as well as the Nest Yale Lock. Google Nest isn't making a replacement. Nest fans were directed to third-party devices that will work with Google Home. So you can't get out of it yet. It's such a smart world.
I used to have the world in my handbag. How did I manage to blow it? I missed the bus, I lost my heart, and an awful lot of mornings. I used to have the stars in my pocket, now I just watch them on TV.
Rainy day, but
And now, news of our friend the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, safe, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Well, what would you expect to find in a nuclear waste storage container which was designed to never be reopened? How about a vacuum cleaner? The British former nuclear plant Sellafield has a pile fuel cladding silo, a locked vault since waste stopped being sent there in the 1970s. So it's mellow. The nuclear site said it had solved the challenging puzzle of how to take waste from a building designed never to be emptied, with 18 10-foot cubed stainless steel boxes already filled with waste. The Electrolux vacuum cleaner was believed to have been used to suck up radioactive dust during the facility's operational life in the 50s and 60s. The chief operating officer at Sellafield said, quote, "The vacuum cleaner is a great example of how challenging it is to clean or clear this silo. We don't know for sure what's in there. They didn't keep accurate records in those days," unquote. He said anything taken into the building by the workforce during that time was likely to be contaminated. Quote, "There was no alternative disposal route for contaminated material, so everything just went into the silo," unquote. A modern-day vacuum cleaner is also playing a part in the waste removal job, according to the BBC, sucking up dust created when waste is dropped into storage boxes. It will eventually be consigned as waste itself, joining its predecessor from the 1960s. Sellafield is also emptying another silo and two ponds which store used nuclear fuel underwater and were not designed to ever be emptied. Again, with the never. Mr. Miller said the cleanup operations represented an important milestone in the site's decommissioning. Decommissioning is a bigger deal than we thought. News of our friend the atom. And speaking of things simmering so they won't explode. Yes, it's a crypto winner. Loopscale, a decentralized finance protocol that's called DeFi in that world, became this year's latest hacking victim last week, losing over $5.8 million, or 12% of its total value locked. It's TVL, to an exploit affecting one of its markets. Quote, "The root cause of the exploit has been identified as an isolated issue with Loopscale's pricing of Rate X-based collateral," said the protocol. "There's an ongoing investigation into how this happened, who did this, and how we can most effectively recover funds." Loopscale, only launched mid last month, raised $4.25 million in funding. In 2021, the protocol was known as Bridge Split at the time, and originally proposed an NFT-based product. Remember those days? NFTs? Meanwhile, Ethereum-based fixed-rate lending platform Term Finance has recovered $1 million of the $1.6 million loss due to a misconfigured oracle that triggered erroneous liquidations in its treehouse market. Is this getting sillier or what? In a statement posted on X, Term Finance detailed the recovery efforts, noting that $400,000, approximately, dollars, you know what dollar, was recaptured internally. An additional $600,000 was secured through negotiations. The outstanding loss now stands at approximately $650,000, a significant reduction from the initial impact. Addressing concerns raised by security analysts, Term Finance clarified that the incident was not the result of a hack. Instead, a bug in an updated Ethernet Oracle caused the liquidation error. They got oracles over there. Quote, no smart contracts were exploited. User funds were not directly targeted, the team emphasized. However, details regarding the negotiation process for the returned funds remained undisclosed. Term Finance has no further comment. But the neologisms never stop. And neither do the thefts, apparently. 3,250 Bitcoin, that's equivalent to $330 million, it says here, were apparently stolen from a Bitcoin holder and then quickly moved through multiple exchanges and swapped from the Monero privacy coin. Such a massive swap into Monero was enough, apparently, to cause the Monero price to spike from around $250 to as high as around $330 before going back down. Ooh, brr, it's a crypto winter. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Nike's ad campaign for this month's London Marathon led to some major faith-related pushback. This is according to the Deseret News from Salt Lake City. Spectators and social media users took issue with a billboard that said, quote, never again until next year, unquote, arguing that Nike should have avoided the phrase never again, which is often associated with the Holocaust. Quote, never again is as iconic a phrase as just do it. Nike should know better. That was the quote from Bill Ackman, a prominent hedge fund manager, writing on X. Who does that? In a follow-up post, Ackman said it's hard to imagine why no one at Nike raised concerns about the ad. Quote, I presume this was unintentional, but it's hard to imagine there was no one at Nike on the marketing team at their advertising firm, banner manufacturer, etc., who didn't know, who didn't think to Google the words, never again, he wrote. Similarly, a human rights lawyer described the ad as in poor taste, also on X. Quote, seriously, Nike, you posted this massive billboard in London for the marathon? I don't believe for a second there was any ill malice, as opposed to the good malice. But please understand the concern with using the words never again, what they represent, and why this was in poor taste, said Arsen Ostrovsky in a Monday statement to reporter Lewis Keen of The Forward, a Jewish newspaper. Nike apologized for any harm it caused with the billboards. The company noted in its statement that the London Marathon ad campaign was built around phrases commonly used by runners. What's wrong with the runners? The National Health Service in Britain, located actually in Scotland, this particular branch of it, in Lothian, has apologized to maternity care staff after an investigation found a toxic workplace culture across its women's services. The health board commissioned an independent review after a whistleblowing report revealed staff shortages and workplace relationships had compromised patient safety. The review, this according to the BBC, found there was distrust between managers and staff in maternity care. Just over a third of frontline workers said they felt unable to report unethical behavior without fear of reprisal, or reprisal itself, or just fear itself. NHS Lothian said it, quote, fully recognizes and apologizes for the poor experience of some staff. It said it had made several improvements in recent months. And from down under, chronic pain, not necessarily down under. Regular hospital visits and the feeling of helplessness became part of everyday life for thousands of South Australians after they received pelvic mesh implants. The implantations are used for conditions including pelvis organ prolapse and stress urinary incontinence. Hey, we're eating here. Some implants were banned in 2017, and a Australian Senate inquiry the next year found that women who were suffering after having the devices inserted were ignored, despite reporting several issues, including pain. state government in Western Australia, that is. South Australia. The state government this week apologized to those who had the devices implanted almost 22 years after they first started being used in South Australia, way back in 2003. There were around 11,000 mesh procedures in South Australia between 2003 and 2018, according to the state government. Paramedic and Australian mesh support group member Kim Blischke, who had one implanted in March 2006, said the apology is a first step. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we at Le Chaudeau lost a friend this week. The wonderful singer, songwriter, Jill Sobule, to whom we paid tribute musically on today's program. That's it for this week. The program returns next week at the same time over the same radio stations or over the audio device of your choice or the choice of your loved one. If you got that kind of thing going. And I hope that you're back, because I will be. The email address for this program, a chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts and all sorts of stuff to read and watch, ponder, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. Thank you. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities, and we use them all, of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the home of the homeless.